In our first reading from the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah speaks of loosing what is referred to as a yoke. And what is this yoke? It is the yoke of sin, that which binds us in a way that affects our life adversely. Well, I read the story of a man who had been freed from the burden of this particular yoke. And he was at work, and his friends were saying to him, "Now that you're a Catholic, how can you believe all that stuff? How can you believe that Jesus was able to turn water into wine? How can you believe that he becomes present on the altar?" And the man, who was still a relatively new Catholic, said, "You know, I can't understand all the finer points yet of Catholic theology. I'm not sure about all of that. But this one thing I can tell you, I can tell you what Jesus has done in my home. He's turned beer into furniture. He's turned beer into furniture. In other words, the money that I've been spending on myself, I'm now spending on my family, because the yoke of sin has been lifted from me." St. Paul was so committed to this theme that, particularly to the church at Corinth, next to Athens, the most important city in ancient Greece, Corinth, a city where you would walk down its streets and you would see the yoke of sin everywhere. Corinth, the city in which Paul said, "I will know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified." That was the heart of his gospel. And I love what Paul does. He plays on the words here. He says, "I haven't come to you with words of plausible wisdom." What does he mean by that? Well, I'm not here as a Greek orator. I'm not here as a Greek philosopher who had this ability to use words in such a way that they could be manipulated in order to draw a reaction out of the audience. No, says Paul, I don't come to you with Greek wisdom. But he says something else. He says, "I come to you in weakness, in fear, and much trembling." Now, this does not mean that Paul was afraid of the Corinthians. But when he says, "I came to you in fear and in much trembling," he's actually referring not to Greek wisdom, but to Jewish wisdom. Because this phrase, "the fear of the Lord," is the key phrase that you find in the book of Psalms, the book of Job, the book of Proverbs. You find it also in Sirach and the Wisdom of Solomon. What are all the books that I just mentioned? It's the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. And so what Paul wants to say is this: I don't come to you with Greek wisdom. I don't come to you with worldly wisdom. I come to you with the wisdom of God. And at the very heart of this wisdom is the cross. Because, as he goes on to say, that my proclamation rests on a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. So that, as Paul then concludes, your faith might not rest on human wisdom. Corinthians, don't put your trust in Greek philosophy as the primary way in which you're going to understand your life. No, don't do that, he says. Rather, let your faith be in the wisdom and power of God. Paul is saying throughout this whole part of chapter 2 of 1 Corinthians that the gospel message is simple, and it has a power, and it has a way of lasting generation by generation by generation. Paul understood that to proclaim and to live the gospel is only possible when Jesus Christ is at the very heart of our lives. Christ and him crucified. He is the one that can transform and change the hearts of people so they can say, "I don't know about all that theology yet, but I do know this, that he's turned beer into furniture." It's very appropriate that today's epistle, today's second reading, is joined to today's gospel. And I want to read for you again our gospel in a translation that's a little bit different from the one I proclaimed a few minutes ago. The one I'm going to read now, it's a little bit more contemporary language. It's what we would call more of a paraphrase. But it kind of captures something of what Jesus says in a way that you might hear it a little differently. So let me read it again. Let me tell you, Christians, what you're here for. You're here to be the salt seasoning. Listen to this. You're here to be the salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of the earth. I like that. To be the salt that brings out the God flavors of the earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste your godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. That's a pretty challenging word from God, from Jesus. If we lose our saltiness, the church is no longer effective, and there's no reason for it to be in the world. And so if we remember who we are and what we're for, I love the way the Roman historian Plutarch put it. He said, for the ancient person, where of course they didn't have any refrigeration, salt was the soul of meat. Salt was the soul of meat. Think about it. If you had a chunk of meat, but you didn't salt it, it wouldn't take very long before it started to decompose and get very stinky. But to add the salt to the meat would be a way to preserve it. So another way we can put this is in the following way. In a particular way, the church is to be the salt, the soul of the world. Now, I was thinking about this for a little bit. Just imagine if you could, if the Roman Catholic Church had never existed. If there had never been the church. What has the church over 2,000 years helped to establish? Education, hospitals, charities, the means by which the world can be preserved. One example of this from last Sunday, and I hope to have Deacon Brian West to come to the 8 a.m. Mass in the fall. But last week, a man by the name of Deacon Brian West, who is in Canmore, and he's the deacon there, but one of his responsibilities is to promote a ministry called Chalice. And Chalice is a Catholic ministry that is around the world that sponsors children in communities. And last week, Deacon Brian was here at St. Peter's talking about the work of Chalice. And at each of the 9:30, 11:30, and 5 p.m. Masses, he then offered an invitation. If you would like to come and talk with me about sponsoring a child, I would be honored to speak with you. Well, as of Monday morning, Deacon Brian told me that 61 parishioners of St. Peter's had sponsored children. You are the salt of the earth. 61 children are going to have a significant change in their life because at the heart of what Chalice does is want to provide education. But here's the other thing that happens. When Chalice establishes itself in a community, they then work towards establishing a church. And then as the church is there, Deacon Brian said, it's not just Catholics or Christians that come. If there are Muslims in that community, they'll start to attend. If there are Hindus, people of other faith traditions, because the church is being present there, and people see there's something about that community that's like salt. It's to make a difference. Then Jesus goes on to talk about the light. Here's another way to put it, says our Lord. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. Isn't that nice? To bring out the God colors. Or to bring out the God flavors, to bring out the God colors, to help people see the reality of God's beauty. Now, we're going to go public with this. We're not keeping it secret. As public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a stand. And now that I've got you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. There is something called spiritual physics, just as there is physics in the natural world. And spiritual physics works this way. If you learn to be a more generous person, you're going to see the world in a more generous way. If you're a more stingy person, you're going to see the world as being stingy. If you're open-hearted, you'll see God that way. If you're closed-hearted, you'll see God that way. It's just the way it is. And so Jesus says, we're to be like this lamp. This lamp is the kind of lamp that would have been known in the time of Jesus. They were oil lamps. And here's the thing about these lamps. They didn't have matches in the first century. So once you got this lamp lit, you didn't want to blow it out too often. So what would you do if you lived as a Palestinian in the first century? Well, the first thing you need to know is that your home would probably only have one little window at the top. That's the only light that would come into your home. So without the lamp, it would be pretty dark in there. And so there's a lampstand that you would put the lamp onto. But if you had to then go out, you didn't want to leave the lamp there just in case something might happen. It might be knocked over and it could start a fire. But you didn't want to blow it out either. So what would you do with it? Well, when you were outside of the house, you would put it under a bushel basket. Now think about this. A bushel basket was not woven. It was made out of clay. And so you'd have this clay bushel basket that had a little bit of an opening so that the oxygen could get in. And then you would put your lamp under that basket while you were outside of the house. But of course, you wouldn't leave it under the basket when you came back in. That would be illogical. You'd put it back on the lampstand. And so Jesus is saying to us as the church, we're to be like this kind of a lamp in a Palestinian home. We're to be on the stand. You don't keep it under the basket. So let me conclude my homily today with one other illustration of how we embody this as a church. On the 22nd of February, I'm going to participate in something that is called the coldest night of the year. I'm going to walk 10 kilometers, and with two other priests at the moment, Father Anthony and Father Wilbert, who are at the Pastoral Center, and we're called the Chill Fathers, along with many other people in Calgary, we're going to be raising money for Feed the Hungry, which is the ministry of the Catholic Church that opens up St. Mary's Cathedral Hall every Sunday and feeds somewhere between 500 and 700 homeless people. We're also going to be raising money for other ministries in Calgary that work with the homeless. And of course, it's not just the Catholic Church that's going to be involved in this. It's a much broader reach than that. But why would we do this kind of thing? Because of our first reading from Isaiah. Not only are we to lift the yoke of sin, we are to extend generosity to the most vulnerable. To practice what the church calls the works of charity, the corporal works of mercy. And so I'm going to invite you, if you would like to sponsor me, if you receive the email that the parish sends out every Friday that has an email from me, in that email you'll see there's a link to the coldest night of the year. I'm so appreciative to say that since Friday, when this was posted on our website, the parishioners of St. Peter's have donated over $1,600 to me and this cause already. That's wonderful. Do you see, these are simple little things, aren't they? It will take me 2 hours to do that walk. It takes 30 seconds, well, maybe a minute, to go online and to say, I'm going to donate $15. It took people last Sunday no more than 5 minutes to come down and sign for a child with chalice. But what it requires of us is to do something, to act, not to just think about it. And that's what Jesus is saying to us today. That's what Isaiah is saying to us today. And that is what Paul so clearly understood. I have come to proclaim Christ and him crucified. And that message, that life, has the power to convert in the way nothing else can, so that someone can say, I might not know all of the ins and outs yet of Catholic theology, but this I do know, that this Jesus is helping me to turn beer into furniture.